Are you looking to modernize your veterinary practice by offering virtual care to pet owners? Fortunately, there's an easy solution from the podcast sponsor, Medici. That's M-E-D-I-C-I. Medici is a telehealth solution built for veterinarians. I've made it easy to check out Medici with a link in the show notes, or you can head over to their website, medici.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. Medici lets you text, call, and video chat with clients with their easy-to-use app. Send or receive images and videos of pets, stay VCPR compliant, and get paid, which is always a wonderful thing, for delivering convenient care right from your phone.
Hi, this is Dr. Aaron Smiley, and I've offered telemedicine to my clients since I started. In 2017, I integrated paid telemedicine with Medici.
Ready to go virtual? Visit medici.md, that's M-E-D-I-C-I.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. And with that, here's the show. Welcome to the Veterinary Success Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Douglas. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Aaron Smiley, who is a practicing small animal medicine veterinarian in central Indiana. He leads two vet corps practices and serves as the chief of staff advisor. He's the president-elect for the Indiana Veterinary Medical Association and is on the University of Illinois Veterinary Alumni Board. Dr. Smiley, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
And we're going to talk about a lot of different things and cover a lot of the different passions that you have. But one of those is just in general, you do a great job on social media of sharing a lot of what you believe in and what makes sense to you and really give back to the profession. Why do you feel the need or the desire to give back so much to the profession and improve the lives of your peers?
I think that that desire to give back to the profession is because it's a profession that I love. So if I've had enough coffee, I'm thankful that I'm in this profession. I get to help people. I get to help animals. So there's a genuine thankfulness of being able to be a veterinarian. I think it's a neat gig. And so in that thankfulness, it's the overflow of that pretty quickly goes to how can I contribute? So like on the alumni board and with the Indiana Veterinary Medical Association, I want the profession to be better for the next generation. So, but that's where a lot of that passion comes from, is just being thankful that I get to be a veterinarian.
Yeah, and it's definitely contagious from just seeing you and getting to know you a little bit better, and I appreciate that. Your journey in veterinary medicine, like most people's, is unique. And when we first met, you talked about how, you know, your initial dream was practice ownership. Yeah. And you kind of went through a season of life where you thought that was going to be the case, and then it didn't happen. At first, you were really upset, and you shared that, and I appreciate that. Can you talk a little bit about that story and why you now think it might be one of the best things that's ever happened to you?
Yeah, so I got, I've always been a bit of an entrepreneur. As a little boy, I broke and trained horses. The first story as far as creating my own business was my older brother and I sold stickers on the school bus. So we had stickers, and we created a marketplace for, the bus driver wasn't so keen on that once we got into it, but we did sell stickers for a while. So there was always this drive as far as to be an entrepreneur. And veterinary medicine appealed to me because I could practice medicine, but then be my own boss. So from the very beginning of veterinary school, that was part of what I would, you know, my ambitions. And so I kind of carved out to the best of my ability a career path that would bring me into that position of ownership. And I got really good advice from Terry O'Neill, who's an excellent accountant and works a lot with veterinarians, when he did an audit and a evaluation of a practice that I was going to buy. And he said, don't do it, Aaron. And that was really wise as far as financially. And so for me to look at what the unemotional aspects of practice ownership right now, and it's different. So over the last 5 to 7 years, practice ownership is still obtainable, but it's just different as far as with consolidation. And I don't think that it's bad or good per se, it's just different. So inside of that, there was definitely a challenge in letting a dream die. And as we go through our life, there are phases and there are seasons to each portion of life. And so letting that dream go, I think, was difficult, but moved through that season and very thankful because I get to do a lot of neat things as far as in emerging, I wouldn't say markets, but emerging areas of veterinary medicine, including telemedicine and virtual care. So with every different thing that happens in life, it's interesting to be able to see, not necessarily a silver lining, but just what the next door is that's going to be opened.
Yeah, if you keep knocking enough, you're going to find something fits with what you want to do and take the passion skill set you have and apply it.
Yeah.
And you talked about telemedicine, and I absolutely want to go and dive into that episode. I think it was episode 3. Talked to Dr. Jess Trimble, who's done a lot of stuff on telemedicine and working out in the West Coast. I'm excited to get your opinion as well.
Before we do that, you talked about being an entrepreneur. So, you know, going from stickers, you're doing some other stuff now. Can you talk about the DVM mentoring piece of it, why you wanted to start that, what that looks like, and share a little bit about the project?
So with DVM Mentor, what we're trying to do is create a marketplace for mentoring. And it comes out of a lot of conversations that I would have with new graduates of asking them what's their highest priority when they graduate. And inevitably, we would get mentoring. I want a good mentor. And then the follow-up question that I would say is, well, how are you going to get that? Well, I hope that I get that from my first employer. And to be a good mentor is not easy, and it's not a skill set that everybody has. I thought, man, we're really trying to find a needle in a haystack, and how can we make that easier for people? And, you know, in a lot of different areas of the business world, people pay for coaches. And I thought, gosh, why haven't we ever talked about a marketplace in mentoring? So what we're trying to do with DVM Mentor, and we're going to officially, as far as launch it at AVMA Leadership Conference in January, so 2020, just coming up. But what we're going to do is we're going to basically be able to have an app where the mentor and the mentee can find each other and mutually agree upon one another, and then have a month-to-month paid interaction on this technology. And we're using objectives and key results. So OKRs is a framework for the mentoring. So the mentee can then say, hey, these are the goals that I want to achieve in the next 30 days. And then in that paid transaction, reach those goals, try to reach those goals with the mentor. And the mentee then can re-up every month. So it's been met with different degrees of interest and skepticism, which I find interesting. I mean, I think that's good. But it's a unique idea, and I don't think that we should necessarily exclude the market from mentoring just because we haven't done it before.
Yeah, and anytime that everyone tells you that they love an idea or it's the greatest idea in the world, maybe then it's like, okay, you don't want everyone to agree. It has to be different. Mm-hmm. You have to challenge some of the norms that are out there because it is a challenge to do anything differently. You talk about mentoring in that first job, and I don't know the statistics. Mm-hmm. I've heard it. I've personally witnessed like just having a great initial mentor that helped kind of teach me how do you be a professional and what does that look like for me. I was fortunate. There was a guy that was 64 years old, had more energy than I was at, you know, 22, 23, and really showed me the ropes and said, hey kid, come over here and I'm going to teach you. And we still talk to this day, not as much as we did in the past, but an awesome way to build that relationship and learn. So I'm definitely one that has seen that be successful for me. So it is hard if you have a bad boss, your first job, to then overcome that and really grow into be a professional, whether that's in veterinary medicine or anything else.
And even in the bosses, the best bosses aren't necessarily good mentors. So, and you think about it as far as like in an athletic analogy, you can be an excellent player, but that doesn't necessarily translate into being a great coach and vice versa, right?
Yep.
So we see good bosses, not just bad bosses, because there's a small percentage of bad bosses. You can have a good boss, but that boss, she's not necessarily interested in mentoring, or she doesn't have the skill set. So if we say of all the veterinarians, we weed it down, and I'm making up numbers, 20% of those veterinarians are good mentors. Well, let's make that 20% accessible to the 80% of mentees who are looking for that subset of veterinarians. And why don't we use technology to make those relationships more accessible?
Makes perfect sense. And transitioning to the topic, I think, of the day, which is telemedicine. Yeah. You are I would call you a telemedicine evangelist.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's the way I would describe.
That's fair.
You've written, you speak at conferences, you've recorded videos, which I think that's a really cool angle, and I compliment you on doing that taking that step. On the topic, why do you view it so critical to the success of veterinary medicine in the future? And I know that's a lot wrapped into one question.
So when I look at virtual care and telemedicine, I think that there's such an opportunity because veterinarians already do it so well. If you go and talk to veterinarians, how many of you guys talk to clients about their pets over the phone? Tons of them. How many? I mean, I dare say almost everybody. How many people send out emails or text messages to their clients about the pets? Again, almost everybody. Oh my heavens. So if we're all already doing it and doing it well, let's take the next obvious step to monetize it. Because this is a utility or a skill, let's say, not a utility, a skill that our clients want and are willing to pay for it. Let's go ahead and monetize that experience. I think the other thing is, as veterinary medicine is changing on the economic standpoint, we view our pharmacy becoming less and less of our total income. And right now, I mean, if you're reading the numbers, 30-ish percent. I don't think that 30% is going to be the reality in 5 years. So instead of trying to fight against this wave of change that, in my opinion, is inevitable because it's better for the consumer, right? Less expensive, more convenient. Joe consumer is always going to pick that. And in a free market system, the consumer always wins. All right. So if we map out the rules that way, this to me is a wave of change that it is ludicrous to stand and try to fight against it. Let's work in a smart way to be able to say, what are other opportunities for revenue? And I see virtual care as a very, very low-hanging fruit of economic opportunity for the veterinary profession.
You talked about, so the pharma revenue was one thing I wanted to touch on. You addressed that. And you recently posted on LinkedIn three questions to talk about or text every virtual care appointment. Can you kind of share those or expound on them?
Yeah, so taking a history on virtual care is a lot like taking a history in the exam room. Our nurses and technicians do it really, really well. But there are some nuances when you're interacting with somebody over a written medium versus a verbal one that you need to make sure that you appreciate the nuances. But the three questions that I'm asking with all of my virtual care cases is, send me a video of the dog. Doesn't have to be any more than 10 seconds, but I want that global perspective of the animal. You can do it with horses, you can do it with herd of cattle. I don't care what animal you're looking at, but I want to see a global view of that animal. So send me a short 10-second video. The other one I want to know is, what additional medication is that animal on, if any? Sometimes what you'll do is you get a very myopic view of the animal with virtual care. But when you ask any additional medication, again, that's a big global look so that I don't make a mistake in virtual care and prescribe something that would be contraindicated based on other prescriptions. And then the last one is, can I recheck this in 24 hours? So if I wouldn't feel as comfortable as far as doing with virtual care if that owner isn't going to have their cell phone or their smartphone close to them within a day where we can check up. So if my therapy or my diagnosis isn't accurate, I want to make sure that that owner can still reach out with me. And those are the, if you think about it, you're like, oh, well, Smiley, that's nothing new. No, it's nothing new. It's what you're doing in physical practice all the time. But I think that for the veterinary profession, we need to articulate these expectations and these best practices in virtual care because they're just not existent.
Yeah, and if you have someone that says they don't have their smartphone around them in the next 24 hours, they're lying. So I feel like, I mean, right there.
That's right.
We know that people those as an extra limb that are attached to them.
Right.
So they're going to have it there. And yeah, again, going back to the comment on the pharmacy revenue, making it easier and less expensive. Give them that option. We're so used to technology today and leveraging that. Why not use that as another revenue source? So I, again, as the non-veterinarian, yep, think that it makes a ton of sense. Talking about the like pricing or revenue side of it, what thoughts you have there? I don't want to lead into that question, but just share anything that you've seen from pricing or thought about it or feedback that you've heard from people.
We get the most response from our clients when it's less expensive than coming into the clinic. And I don't think that's going to be, I don't think that will continue. So once we get a bulk majority of veterinarians using virtual care, I think that the veterinarians will quickly, that convenience might even be more expensive than coming into the clinic. But as we introduce this technology to clientele, it helps us get buy-in from the client if it's a little bit less expensive. So then I can tell the client, hey, this is less convenient, or this is more convenient, less expensive, and they like that. But yeah, I think that the consumer is going to pay for the convenience at some point, right? If I can have McDonald's delivered to my door and I'm paying for that convenience to get my French fries here, I think that Joe consumer, he'll be very willing to actually pay a premium for that convenience of not having to bring the pet to the office, not having to take off of work, and quickly being able to get a diagnosis and a prescription.
I would agree with you. Think about like Uber Eats or these, you pay a delivery charge, a service charge. Now, again, you go back to like Amazon and now we ever expect everything to be shipped free. So
that's
you
right.
Have to think about how you set expectations. But I think it opens the door as well. If virtual care is the new norm in the future, that frees up life as a veterinarian to be very different.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in the same area. If you wanted to travel, do different things, I just view that as such a cool element to the profession that really opens up a lot more flexibility in the day-to-day life.
Totally agree. And to always remind my veterinary colleagues that you're still the doctor and you still make all the decisions. So there'll be conversations I'll get in with other practitioners. They'll say, oh, Aaron, yeah, I hear you, but what if you need to see the animal? Then I, as the licensed professional, tell the client, I need to see your pet. I need to see that horse. I need to see that dog. So it's important for veterinarians as they look to onboard virtual care, always remember, front of mind, you are the doctor, you are the queen, you are in charge, and you are going to use your medical discretion, just like you do right now in your current telemedicine, you will use your medical discretion to make the best decision for that pet.
So what do you see, and I think you shared another really good post. Again, I would encourage anyone that's not following you on LinkedIn or social media, follow, and we'll get to some of the different areas that you're online here in a little bit. You had a great post on the distribution of virtual care cases. What have you found is the most common areas and kind of where does it fit best and where have you seen it not be as successful?
Yeah, so it's just exactly what I see in practice. So half of what I see on virtual care is skin and gastrointestinal. I mean, so itchy and diarrhea. And that's, I've never done the numbers as far as what I see in physical practice, but I would guess that it's close. I'm a small animal practitioner in the middle of the Midwest. I'm seeing skin and then GI upset. And that's what we see on virtual care. I get the question as far as like, when has virtual care gone awry? And very, very few times, because I'm insistent that I'm still the veterinarian. And so if I get uncomfortable, I just tell the owner that she needs to come in. So I haven't really gotten burnt on virtual care, because as soon as my spidey sense goes off, I have the owner come in. Now, certain owners will get more pushy and they'll say, no, I want this, right? They'll say, hey, this dog, I'm going to send you a picture of the skin and it needs antibiotic now. Well, I'm the clinician and I make that decision. So I ask some open-ended questions and I am very confident in then engaging in an appropriate way with the owner of going, oh, no, right? I'm going to go ahead and diagnose and prescribe and ask you some more questions. So I could see a clinician getting burnt if they fell into the trap of letting the owner, quote unquote, boss them around.
That makes perfect sense. Anything else on the kind of the telemedicine front, virtual care, that you feel like is important to make sure people realize and understand?
I think that it's important for clinicians to, when they're thinking about virtual care and telemedicine, to ask themselves how often are they engaged in it right now. And if you really do an inventory, you'll realize that you're practicing telemedicine all the time, right? And now we're just going to monetize it. I see the biggest struggle is converting the clientele from a free platform to a paid one. And that's where we would engage our nursing team or our technician team. So what we do is at our clinic is we still allow free telemedicine to the nurses or the technicians, because we couldn't just do cold turkey with our clients and say, oh, you've been getting emails back from the doctor and now you're not going to, because it'll tick off my clientele. So if you're in that moment going, yeah, this makes sense, but we don't know how to transition, boy, really leverage your technicians, leverage your nurses, allow them to offer the free engagement with the clients. But then if it needs to be elevated to a doctor, now all of a sudden it's a paid transaction. And for the most part, clients understand that.
And are you doing anything creatively as far as billing, or is it just the same as everything else? Or do you see that changing as well with how it's billed?
You could do a concierge service. I think that if you did a subscription service, that would be very, very easy. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people that are doing that. So I think that you could offer concierge. We don't. We serve a less affluent community in the Midwest. So we don't offer a concierge service, but you could do that. Make it a subscription. We bill virtual care as if it were a physical exam. So each incident, right, is then billed. And we always warn the owner, hey, I'm going to push a virtual care charge. Feel free to keep me updated. And in that question, if you're a clinician, you're like, gosh, I don't know how I would do it. Just think about how you bill in the exam room. If somebody comes in and they have just one more question, do you tell them, oh, I'm sorry, we've just hit 20 minutes. You're going to have to pay more. You don't do that. You go, oh, yeah. But if they come back in 2 weeks and they have a whole different set of problems, you're probably going to charge them. So you use that same level of common sense that you use in the exam room. It very easily translates over into the virtual care arena.
Yep, perfect. I appreciate that. That's super helpful. As an incoming IVMA president, a lot of responsibility there in the challenges of any sort of organization like that. You know, you see transition year to year, and you have all these strategic things that you want to accomplish. And it can be hard to get done in one calendar year. What do you see as something that you're the most excited about, you know, taking the reins and helping push that organization forward?
I'm excited about Indiana leading the way. Indiana is such a unique state in the Midwest where we still have industry and we have this very diverse economy, from people that are still making things, right, to professionals and to technology. So I look at Indiana, especially in the veterinary space, of leading the way. So on these different areas, leading the way in telemedicine, leading the way as far as in how do we appropriately engage and interact with our technicians and our nurses. That's a hot topic right now in veterinary medicine. With Purdue and the nursing program, I think that the state of Indiana can lead the rest of the nation to show everybody how to do it. And I mean, those would probably be the two initiatives that we're going to push. Our hashtag is IVMA Lead 2020, And we plan on leading the way in technology and integrating that into veterinary medicine. And then as far as with the non-veterinary support staff, how do we best engage them and how do we play into their strengths so that we can offer more affordable veterinary medicine for the citizens in the state of Indiana?
I love it. Do you want to dive in any deeper on the nursing technician side? Because I think, again, I've heard that comment made multiple times in just the lack of freedom and flexibility for them to go empower them. They're smart. They understand this. Let them go do their job what they're hired for and don't micromanage them and leverage their skill set.
I see veterinary medicine following the dentist in how they utilize, I'm going to call them nurse, but what do they call them?
Hygienist.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry. I'm ignorant. All the dentists out there are like, guys, he doesn't know hygienist.
It's all right. There's no dentist listening to this.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. It's just a veterinarian. Okay. So my younger brother's a dentist. He'd probably be the only one that would listen. So those hygienists are so effective in producing dentistry. And I think that that's the opportunity that we have in veterinary medicine is these nurses, the highly skilled nurses that are graduating from programs like at Purdue. So they're graduating with a bachelor's from a Big Ten university. Oh, my heavens. Let's have them produce veterinary medicine. So I think that we can take a very, very easy step in watching what the dentists do with their hygienists. And man, we can produce a lot of veterinary medicine with these nurses.
100%. And just, again, I think we've talked about it before on the podcast. So really where I play, my niche is working in veterinary medicine and dentistry. And I see that. And I've seen that over the course of time. And, you know, 30% of the revenue of a general dental practice comes from hygiene.
It's incredible.
So there is a huge opportunity out there for veterinary medicine to say, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just go, look, this works. And there's certain things that, again, they're not the doctor. They're not making the final call, but they can bring that experience in and say, this is what we think. Can I get the sign up? Can we do this?
The other thing, so you're 100% right. And in that, it creates a better work environment and a better life for the hygienist. So she can demand a serious salary, a real salary, right? She's not just working in fast food. These are women that are professionals that can support their family, women and men, but predominantly women, that can support their families with good wages because they can produce dentistry. What would happen if we bring that same economic model into veterinary medicine? Our veterinary nurses could command a whole lot more salary if they could produce veterinary medicine. So that's what I'm excited about too, is not just being able to provide to the citizens of Indiana. That's very, very important. But my heavens, for the hardworking people on my team, the men and women, basically mostly women on our team that come in and work at a high level, I would love to be able to increase their wages. And when they can start to produce veterinary medicine, we can get their wages up.
So many different times, and I'm thinking about other interviews and conversations I've had about how, you know, money is this like taboo topic. I always go back and if you can have a more effective practice,
that's right.
You can pay your team more. That's a huge impact. So that's what you can do with it. You don't have to retain and do other things, like just support your team better. So I love the idea and really am excited to see where that goes with IVMA and the work that you're doing there. So thank you. What's been, I guess, the best advice that you got outside of maybe Terry O'Neill telling you a while back not to get in, you know, or get
don't
get
buy out, that practice.
Don't get over your
that's
front
right.
of your skis. But is there any nuggets of wisdom that you felt like early on, again, trying to tie back into the mentoring piece of what's really helped you from a professional perspective?
So my dear friend, Dr. Larry Firkins, who's at the University of Illinois and is assistant dean there and is just a wonderful human being, he was a professor of mine. And I felt sorry for myself at one point during my veterinary education. And I went into his office and I started feeling sorry for myself. And he said, well, Aaron... He said, I'll give you 24 hours to feel sorry for yourself, and then you need to be done. And it kind of caught me off guard. I'm like, geez, I was coming in here for a little compassion. This guy's giving it to me. But it was such sound advice because I tend to navel gaze sometimes and really feel sorry for myself. And that advice has stuck with me to not ignore the things that are tough, but to give myself a set amount of time to be upset and kick the can and then know that, okay, we're going to be done with that. So that was just such sound, sage advice. Because I think that for the longest time before he gave me that advice, I just tried to ignore when I felt sorry. Like, oh, I'm fine. No. Like, you're pretty down right now, but this is going to come to an end. Like, you get this amount of time, and then it's over, and then we're moving on.
The quote that sticks out to my mind when I think about that is, you've survived 100% of the worst days of your life up to this point. You'll continue to go forward. And again, that dives into a whole other, you know, realm of topics as far as mental health and things that I think are huge, big trends in veterinary medicine as well that need to be addressed and are being addressed. There's a lot of great resources out there. I made that commitment on this podcast that I'm going to work into 2020 to have more of those discussions. So that's something that's still actively being worked on. Yeah, as we kind of transition towards the end, fun conversation, anything that you want to talk about or share from, again, like the videos that you're doing, the website, the content, the stuff that you're producing that you feel like would be beneficial to your peers out there in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to engage on social media, so most of my posts are on LinkedIn. If you're out there and you want to have me come and talk to your group, love to do that. I get a big kick out of that. I guess my encouragement to veterinarians listening to this is share your ideas. Don't hold your ideas back. And sometimes we think that, oh, I got to keep this good idea to myself because somebody's going to steal it. Nobody's going to steal it because most of the ideas that get, I mean, there's so much work to flesh out an idea, but share and create community in that to be able to say, hey, what do you think about this? And I think that the more that we can communicate about ideas, I think the faster things progress. Well, hey, what are you thinking? Oh, I how do you brand your rabies tag? Oh, I don't know. What are you talking about? Well, geez, we give these rabies tags to these dogs. Why can't we somehow create some kind of market awareness on the rabies tag? I don't know. Right, but those kind of things. So I would encourage veterinarians to share ideas. And in that community of sharing ideas, I think that we can advance the profession a whole lot faster.
Collaboration is key to driving innovation and moving forward. So I like that. It's great. I always ask the same question. So again, the podcast is around success, which I think that's such a difficult term to define. Yeah. But what's your definition when you look at it from as an individual husband, father, personally, but also as a practicing veterinarian and someone that's out there in the community? Is there a difference? Is it the same?
Oh, no. I think it's the same. I think it's the same as far as me being a successful member and citizen of my community is intertwined in me being a successful leader of the practice. Our goal as far as with our employees is that by working at the clinic, they become better mothers, better fathers, better citizens, that it all is integrated together. And my definition of success would be strong relationships, right? So to have the people that care about me and the people that I care about, this is going to sound like a lot of pronouns, but that everybody knows that they're cared for. Does that mean? And that's not my responsibility for everybody, but I want the people to know, the people that I love to know that they're loved, and vice versa. So success for me is when I can, when I wake up and then at the end of the day, know the people that love me and know that they love me. That's a day that we're getting it. We've had enough coffee. We got her done. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate you being open and sharing that. So if someone is interested in bringing you out to speak, following your work, outside of following you on LinkedIn, where would you direct them? Where would you send them? How do they get in touch?
So virtual care, you can go AaronSmileyDVM.com and you can get links there. So that'll take you. And then off of Medici's site, so Medici is the company that I work with on virtual care. If you go to Medici.md/AaronSmiley, then they can help you as far as integrating virtual care. And if you have any virtual care questions, you could always buzz me on LinkedIn or send me an email off of Aaron Smiley DVM. Happy to help anybody and everybody implement. And I don't care what platform you use. You sure as heck don't have to use Medici. I think it's great. I love it. I think it's the best one out there. But if you just want to learn more as far as from our success in virtual care, happy to have that conversation with anybody.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, sharing what you know and encouraging the community to collaborate, innovate, and keep pushing forward.
So love it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. The comments made on today's show should not be taken as investment, tax, or legal advice. All comments are for educational purposes only. You should talk to your professional team before implementing anything. Isaiah is the founder of ID Financial Planning and Wealth Management. Isaiah is a registered investment advisor in the state of Indiana. The biggest compliment you can give is to share this podcast with a friend. Reviews help the show get found, and Apple Podcasts is a platform that is predominantly how people listen to the show. If you have 3 minutes, love the show, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us an honest review and rating. That'll help more people find the show. For all of today's links and information, head over to theveterinariansuccesspodcast.com. There you can also subscribe via your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss another episode. Finally, if you'd like more information and insights and the ability to have your voice heard, please consider joining the private podcast Facebook group. You can search for the Veterinarian Success Podcast on Facebook or head over to theveterinariansuccesspodcast.com. Scroll down to the About Your Host and click on the Facebook icon. Then I can approve you, let you into the group, and would love to hear from you there. Thanks for listening, and I'll be talking again to you soon.